Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about a very unique character and an amazing life from the God story, Daniel, whom we like to call a lion's heart.
Well, you know, this book is like packed.
Loaded.
Jam-packed. If you have never read the first 11 or 12 chapters of the book of Daniel, you might want to consider spending a little time. It's interesting reading, and there are just so many moving parts that you can just think about it for hours.
Yeah, it's true.
So, like right now, I'm imagining the claustrophobic smells and the feelings of fear and all the other emotions of being thrown into a lion's den. Mm-hmm. I've only seen a couple of lions in my lifetime, and they've been in zoos.
Yes, and you know, the thing about their tongues, I've heard that a couple of times, how they have, you know, a kitten, when they lick you, it's rough, but a lion is, you know, many more times that they have barbs on their tongue, so if you're licked two or three times, five times, you're actually bleeding. It's that rough. It's like really heavy sandpaper.
Yuck.
Or rubbing a brick on yourself.
Really?
Yes. I've read about it.
I'm glad that I haven't run into very many lions. Well, Daniel's devotion, contrasted with Satan's opposition, is what got Daniel into hot water. And it was God who brought him through. Daniel lived his lifetime over a span of several kings and dynasties. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because he was picked up as a teenager and dropped off into a foreign land.
Yeah, most of us have heard the story about Daniel in the lion's den, but there's an interesting story of his young life at the beginning of Daniel. So right in chapter 1, after King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon took over Jerusalem, he told the head of the palace staff to get some Israelites from the royal families and from the nobility. And this is what he wanted. He wanted young men who were healthy and handsome.
Nice.
Intelligent and well-educated.
I say.
Good prospects for leadership positions in the government. Perfect specimens is what he wanted.
Huh.
And then what
they had to be young.
Yes. And then what they were going to do was indoctrinate them in the Babylonian language and the lore of magic and fortune-telling.
Wow.
And on top of that, the king ordered that they be served from the same menu as he ate, so they were going to have the best food and the finest wine, and then after 3 years of training, they would be given positions in the king's court. So this Daniel had some serious things happen at a really young age.
And they had to make some serious choices.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, just think about it. They were getting prepped for magic and fortune telling. But God obviously had different ideas because he gave these four guys knowledge and skill in both books and life. And in addition, Daniel was gifted with visions and dreams. So he knew a lot about that, and God had just shown him that. And at the end of their training, the head of the royal staff took them into Nebuchadnezzar, and when he interviewed them, he found them far superior to all the other guys who'd been trained with
them. Because they'd eaten vegetables.
Well, so they started serving, and whenever he consulted them on anything, you know, on books or just on life itself, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians.
Well, this is one of the just striking things out of the book of Daniel. We have a tendency to, coddle teenagers a little bit and mm-hmm. whatever, but these guys, I mean, they were right in the battle at a very young age. And they really had the basic, they had been taught the basics.
Apparently.
Even though they were picked up out of their land by the time they were, you know, in their teens.
They withstood indoctrination.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was.
Well, so, you know, the years kind of go by, mm-hmm. and Darius the Mede now is the king. So, like we said, there were several dynasties that Daniel served under. Darius the Mede, and this is in Daniel 6, if you'd like to read about it. He appointed 120 governors. Now, that can be translated satraps, but that means nothing to us. So I went with governor. 120 governors. And so you're not talking about a small area. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was they had taken a lot of land, and so this is part of their strategy. They had the strategy of assimilation. So they would take the brightest and the best, and they would, like you said, indoctrinate them, and then they'd turn them around, and then they would give them responsibility. Well, this is really neat because it says, then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among these leaders because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Now, I got to tell you, I don't think he was still a teenager at this particular point, but this guy's on the fast track.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
And as would make sense, you know, in any kind of environment, there's always a lot of competition or mm-hmm. whatever. So the jealous commissioners and governors began trying to find a ground of accusation. Now, think about that. He's going to appoint three commissioners, and Daniel's going to be one of them. So two of them are jealous.
Right.
Along with all of these governors.
And who maybe haven't been on the fast track. Who knows how long they've been working.
Yeah. And so they try to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they couldn't find any mm-hmm. because he was such high character. Again, this emerged out of a teenager. And he had no evidence of corruption in as much as he was faithful. And these men said, "We're not going to find any grounds for accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God."
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Can you imagine, or isn't it amazing? Can you imagine having a reputation so squeaky clean? I mean, it says he completely outclassed the other governors because of his spirit and intelligence. Well, you know, we've kind of heard about his intelligence, but it just seems like, to me, when it says that someone's spirit, he must have shown kindness and fairness and wisdom in dealings with people.
He was a quality yeah. person that had yeah. God, you know, just oozing out of his pores is what was going on.
Yeah, and they'd probably also seen him bow to his God at his window. So,
and this process, I'm sure they all got to know each other.
I'm sure they did.
Oh, yeah, he's the guy that does that.
Have you seen him do that?
So the rats assemble and set the trap. Therefore, King mm-hmm. Darius signed a decree or a 30-day moratorium from anybody bowing down to another god. So this was like a setup, but, you know, obviously the king was kind of obtuse when it came to this.
Right.
And in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And once Daniel knew that the document was signed, he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God. Now, this is another thing I love about him, because he has such courage, you know, just like was reflected in Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. Sure, you know, if you want to throw us into the fire or if you want to throw me into the lion's den, go ahead and do it, because, you know, my God is greater than you. So this process ends up happening, and these men conspired on their arrival, and they found Daniel praying before his God, and the king was stuck.
Yeah.
He had to obey his own law.
Yeah. I love a couple things about this. First, I hope that when I'm faced with anything like this, I'm as bold as Daniel. But, you know, he didn't change a thing. He didn't pray with the curtains drawn all of a sudden.
Right.
You know, yet he didn't flaunt what he was doing.
No,
he was
in his own place.
Undaunted. And that's amazing to me. And the second is that you get the feeling from the sentence, and like you were saying, that the king had thought, if he had thought through what this was going to mean, he may not have done this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they seemed, these rats that you talked about, they seemed to know how to entrap Daniel, but also how to entrap the king, probably in his own pride.
Yes.
So they had it figured out.
They did. They had a racket. Well, and they had something that they wanted. So because they had something that they wanted, they were willing to go to great lengths. So, long story short, Darius has no choice but to place Daniel into the den of lions. So the king goes off to his palace, and he spends his night fasting. And no entertainment was brought before him. Apparently, kings, you know, even when they throw people in the lion's den, like their entertainment. And his sleep fled from him. Now, this is God's part. You know, this is, you know, God's working in this king's heart. Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day, and he went in haste to the lion's den. And when he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God." So he's picked up some things. This is why he was willing to appoint Daniel, because he saw the root of why Daniel was the man that he was. "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" And Daniel speaks up and says, "Yep." And he was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found in him. And I love this phrase, because he had trusted in his God.
Amen. Wow, is that cool?
Kind of gives you goosebumps, doesn't it?
It does.
What kind of goosebump people are, I think? The king then gave orders. This is the hard part of the story. Mm-hmm. And they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them and their families into the lion's den. So there were big consequences to this plot.
And fast.
And check this out. These are some hungry lions. Maybe Daniel had given them an appetite or something. They brought them, and before they had reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones and apparently licked them to death, based on what you said earlier.
It doesn't say that.
what a contrast.
Yes.
And it shows this isn't just like a nice kid's story. This is like life.
This is a dangerous story.
It is. It's life or death. And Daniel, in his entire life in these other king's courts in this foreign land, was beset with situations that could have cost him his life.
Yeah. There were a couple of other details about this. Is that, first of all, when the king ordered him into the lion's den, he said, "Your God to whom you're loyal," which you already mentioned. But also, he apparently had to be there when he was lowered into the den, because they closed it, and then he had to use his signet ring, used his seal. And the next morning, like you said, what a cool question. Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, and then to see that he has, what would that do to you?
Well, this is a really nice addition to the whole story of Nebuchadnezzar, which happened a little bit earlier. It's kind of in between here. So there are some of the kings, the huge kings of historic import, when you kind of look through the different kings of history, that are impacted by God in ways that are just almost unimaginable. It's one of the reasons why I never fail to continue to have a heart to pray for our president or for leaders in the world. But anyway, I digress. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in the land, because he had the authority to do it. "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel." Now get this, "For he is the living God, and he endures forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on the earth. He has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Wow. I mean, what?
I know.
what a great story. It kind of takes you back to the beginning, too. He starts out with his buddies, and you don't hear a lot more about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Right.
But they were men of principle, and whether it was risky or not. And, it reminds me, like they said, even if he doesn't spare us, even if he doesn't answer our prayers,
as they were thrown into the fire,
we are not going to bow. Now, that is resolve of heart that is so filled with courage. And so I ask myself the question, do I have this kind of brave faith in the fiery furnace of life or the pitfalls of unprincipled, self-serving men and women that are in authority in our world? Hey, forstream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. And, Bernadette and I have been pursuing the freedom of a kingdom life for a number of years together, and we've been buddies for decades, haven't we?
We have been.
And the king has proven himself faithful.
He has. And if you would like to interact with us in any way, email us at 4@4thstream. That's the number 4, not F-O-U-R, the number 4@4thstream.com.
And if you'd like to listen to today's programming in its entirety, go to 4thstream.com and click on the radio button.
Together we are finding hope at 4thstream.com.
And when you click on that radio button, you get to see a picture of Bernadette and I, which makes it extra worth it.
Dave.